Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There is evidence that creativity is dependent on an extensive depth of knowledge. There's also evidence that acquiring that depth of knowledge can squelch creativity. So, is there a happy medium? Is there a sweet spot, if you will? If anyone knows that, it's Mimi Chenfeld. She's a teacher, speaker, and writer in the early childhood field currently. She teaches children of all ages, consults and writes in Central Ohio. She also conducts seminars and keynote presentations around the country. She's is a part-time instructor at Otterbein College in Westerville. And her previous books, including Teaching by Heart and Teaching in the Key of Life, remain widely used in early childhood education. Lately, she's been a regular contributor to Columbus Parent Magazine. And we welcome her back as a regular on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Welcome back, Mimi.
An irregular. Irregular.
Irregular.
Hi, Ann.
To our listeners, you know, we always like to hear from you on this program. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, and tell us what you think. Is there a sweet spot or a happy medium between that structured education that statistically appears important for people at who are highly creative, and a creative education that doesn't squelch it in others? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So you just returned from the annual national conference of the National Association for the Education of Young Children.
Right.
There are about 19,000 teachers from all over the world there. That's something.
It's a fabulous. It's actually every single year, Ann.
Okay.
They have an annual conference in one of the cities. And it's always, you know, such a reassurance to me when I see like the 10-year plan, because I think, well, the world will still be here in 10 years. Because in
we'll know
9
after.
Years, they're going to be in Atlanta, and then in 8 years, they're going to be in, you know, Anaheim. So they have it all set in case anyone's
optimistic.
Worried about the end of the world.
Right.
But it's a fabulous conference.
How much? It doesn't say anything about creativity in this title for this organization. So how much does creativity play a role in these kinds of conferences?
Well, you know, it's very interesting, Ann, because the conference reflects what's going on in the country. And, of course, there's a huge, you know, debate going on in this country with, you know, take young children and start them with formalized lessons and start them with flashcards and start them with reading and why wait? Why wait till they're three? You know, we should start when they're in the womb. You know, you be a womb mother.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one half of the country, you know. Actually, educators aren't pushing for that as much as families and folks who think that that's what should be happening. And so they kind of resent or question time for play and joy and exploration if it's not connected to a given outcome. And so that is squelching. But this particular conference, we had about 1,000 presentations.
Wow.
It was phenomenal.
It was week-long conference?
3 days.
Whoa.
Well, actually four. It's a phenomenal conference.
Okay.
And my session, I love, you want to hear what
so
my session?
So you led a session?
Oh, I always
present. Of course,
present.
Okay.
But my session, and I love titles. I love titles better than the workshops.
Oh, by the way, her title is The Queen of Fun. Go ahead.
Well, that was a child wrote that to
the
me.
The best kind.
Is that the cutest?
I love it. I still love it.
And then one time one child said to his mom, "That Mimi is a very playful girl."
high praise.
I'd rather have that than, you know, an Academy Award.
What was the name of your
My session was called, this is with quotes, again, can we do that again? Teaching in the Key of Life. That was my session, and we had a blast.
Again, meaning when a kid asks to do something again.
When they love it, let's do it again. They never, the funny thing is, you know, this accepted research that young children have short attention spans. And that is a lot of BS. Because anyone who knows a young child knows you have to sometimes bribe them, kick them out of something that they love because they love it so much they drive you nuts. You know, again.
That's a sign of somebody who's engaged.
Exactly. And when they love something, they utterly love it to the, you know, depths of their soul. And they're not into like, oh, wait, I'm an early childhood child. I should have a short attention span. So I think we lose the children when we don't engage them. And that's where the creativity whole issue comes in.
My guest is Mimi Brodsky Chenfeld, author, educator, contributor for Columbus Parent Magazine. If you have a question or comment for Mimi, you want to join the conversation, we're talking about creativity in and outside of the classroom, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So that idea, when a kid is saying again, 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 and we've all been there when we're reading a book to our child, I remember mine was The Very Snow or Snowy Day. That
yes.
Jack
Ezra Keats.
Right. And I think back to that
Ezra
book,
Jack Keats.
Right. I think back to that book and I'm trying to remember what did I love about it. And I just know that it kept evoking feelings and ideas in me and imagine my imagination somehow. I just wanted to hear about their snowy day.
That was a book that you loved when you were a child.
Right. And I read it until I was actually quite old. Yeah. I would just pick it up and read it.
I understand, Anne.
Okay. Actually, when I see it in the bookstore, I still check it out.
You get the adult version.
We understand, quotation marks. Okay, Mimi, what does it mean?
No, but what I was going to say is sometimes, we don't have the logical reason why some kids just get hooked. For instance, I have an article in one of the collections called A Year in the Land of Oz. And one year, I've been at the Jewish Center Early Childhood Program for 42 years, so I'm still there till I get it right. But one year, we had one class that literally did not leave. They fell so in love with the Wizard of Oz, or some of the kids called it the Lizard of Oz. Mim, can we do the Lizard of Oz? Anyway, they fell so in love with it that every single week, when they came to me, because I did movement and music with them, they came either as the monkeys, as the
Flying
Tin
monkeys.
Woodsman,
uh-huh.
Right? As Toto. I mean, and we no matter what, we were stuck in Oz, and everything had to be in Oz. We had Thanksgiving in Oz. We had nutrition in Oz. We had letters of the alphabet in Oz. I mean, we just had to stay in Oz.
Uh-huh.
So the point is, when they're excited about something, like with the snowy day with you, because you loved it and we honored and we could honor it, we could do everything with a snowy day. We could do the whole damn curriculum in the snowy day if we think that way.
Uh-huh.
But if we think, here's the snowy day and here's the curriculum, and there's no connection, then you're going to teach in the key of death. But if you teach in the key of life, you say no matter what a child is interested in, we can teach everything from that
through
point.
Through that prism.
Exactly.
Pam in Columbus, you're on the air with Mimi Chenfeld. Welcome to the show, Pam.
Hey, thank you. Two quick things.
First, hi, Pam.
I'm a Grammy, and I make up stories, and they want me to tell them over and over again, and then they point out when I make a mistake in them. So the girls are 5 and 7 now, but this started when they were 3. And I just think when you talk about attention to detail, I was in the one class one time, and she said in front of the whole classroom, Grammy, that's not how it went. Okay, secondly, I just, sponges and they want to replay those games, etc. And I'm a little entertainer with them. I'm personally back in school right now. I'm a nurse and I'm getting my doctorate. And I wanted to, if you would address what you had talked about, that fine balance, and I can listen off the air, but I am pathetic. I have 3 kids in college right now, and I am so pathetic. Everything I learn, I'm like, oh my gosh, I could do this. I could do this, because the creative juices that might have been dried up for a while because you kind of get in a routine. So I don't know if this is making sense, but it's almost overwhelming how many things I feel are left that need to be done.
In other words, how unfair that comment, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I'm not suggesting you're old, Pam, either, but that image that when you're older, you can't learn. I would love to go back to school.
Are you asking me or
Pam? Yeah, Mimi.
Oh, honey. Did you just read the article? Which writer is it who is starting his new novel at 100?
Oh!
It was in the papers.
Yeah.
Evelyn Wong, or somebody like that. No, who wrote Caine Mutiny?
I don't know.
I forgot, but he's 100 years old, and he's working on his new novel.
Maybe we can find that out.
Look at Grandma Moses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
She didn't start until she was very elderly.
She started at 90.
Right.
But, Pam,
you know what, though? This energy drives people crazy because they're like, what is wrong with you?
No.
Well, Pam, I have a support group. You can come to me because I think I have the aging process reversed.
Yeah, I have Mimi on for therapy, frankly, personal therapy. I think it's wonderful, Pam. It sounds wonderful.
Yeah. I'm so happy.
And Pam, you know what? You're such a good example of what we're kind of talking about, the joy and the fun of the doing and the excitement. And when children lose that, all kids, just about all kids have that. And then when we kill it for them, sometimes they never get it back. Sometimes it's gone. That's it.
And I think we need to keep it fun. Raising the kids. And one last thing is that this all got spurred because I lost a really well-paying job that I hated it. I hated my boss. I hated how they treated me, et cetera, et cetera. And I took a lesser-paying job and decided this school thing. I could never. I'm so happier. The money is. It doesn't even matter. I'm fine. I found out I was saving so much of my money that the money. It's so hilarious. Like, hey, I didn't change my lifestyle.
Pam, I was distracted. But did you say what you're getting your PhD in?
I'm getting my doctorate in nursing.
Okay, but it's even still. And we do have Amy Jurovich, my associate producer, looked it up on the internet. Nola Oakes, the world's oldest college graduate at 95 years old, set another record by earning her master's degree at age 98. And now she's writing a book at age 100.
Oh, all right.
And she has
my
another.
My heroes.
Yeah.
There's another 100-year-old writer writing a novel. Is it Herman Woke?
Yeah.
Amy?
Michael DeBonis, my producer, just put out Herman Woke for me. I don't know if that's the guy
who it
or
was.
Not. Yeah, wrote K-Mutiny, right?
See?
Okay. Gosh, there's
God,
your...
I'm a font of information. That's the last information I'm doing.
This is why I was like, I don't know. Let's ask. Well, Pam, good luck. Have fun.
Go. Great show.
Thanks.
Keep on, sweetie.
I love you guys, Ann.
Thanks,
you're
Pam.
My new best friend.
Thanks
Thank
for listening.
Thank you. Good luck with all you're doing, hon.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. We're talking about creativity. Is there a way to find that sweet spot between a structured education and maintaining a sense of creativity and nurturing that in children of all ages? Give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, rebels on the move in Congo. We'll go there with NPR's John Burnett to Africa's endless war. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point is this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. 32 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 42. Clear skies tonight, a low of 25 degrees. Sunny and a high of 47 on Thursday. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. November is Personal Healthcare Month in Ohio, and the Wexner Medical Center wants to help people live a healthier, happier life. Information on how to join the Wexner Medical Center and make a pledge to live healthy is at medicalcenter.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. We're talking about creativity in and outside of the classroom, in and outside of a structured environment, and whether or not we can find that balance in our classrooms between the structure that is apparently necessary and probably is to a certain extent, and the other part of learning, which is the creative part. Give us a call if you've got a good idea, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Jeff in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jeff. You're a retired teacher.
Yes, I taught for 40 years in middle school, high school. I taught sciences and mainly physics, and at that end of the educational spectrum, I'm not going to say that we really see the damage that's been done, but my students always tended to be people who were very, very well structured, knew how to play the game, jumped through all the hoops, and it was very, very hard when given the freedom to discover, put a problem before them, ask them, what are you interested in? How do you want to work these ideas into that interest? It was very hard for them because they had been so well, and I'll say indoctrinated, that's probably too strong of a word, into the educational system of success numbers, those sorts of things. But the bottom line is I've always found in all ages of kids, when just playing with them, working with them, that they like to discover, and they like to make their own rules, and they like challenges. And I think that if that's where we need to be with early child education is in empowering them with the ability to discover and help them learn rather than directing their learning.
You said that beautifully, Jeff, but I don't see, I think that what we're talking about goes for every grade level and every age. And, you know, for years I've been not focused on early childhood, but a lot of my time is spent there. But basically what we're saying is even more important for the older kids who have already gone through a system that has repressed that. And, you know, we used to be known for creativity, you know, years ago. I mean, this, I won't tell you how many years I'm teaching, but but before everyone in this entire building was born, I started teaching. But anyway, but going back, we were very worried about the Japanese system. We were the Japanese kids. I don't know if you remember that,
Jeff. I remember
that. They were like our role models. They were our role. And our kids are such a bunch of dingheads, and those Japanese kids are just like awesome. And then we realized just what you're saying about your students, the Japanese kids learned to learn in a system that was very tightly structured and very, very ordered. And they produced, but they could not go off on their own. They couldn't explore. And so at that time, this is before our testing became so repressive that it killed many of our kids and teachers. And they said, "You Americans have taught the kids to think for themselves and to discover, and you've taught creativity. You know, taught them to be creative." And we've taught them the superstructure and rote learning and, you know, tightly formulated ways of understanding. And so they look to us as an idea of creativity. And we've killed that. I mean, just about in the system. That's what I was trying to tell Anne, that this year at the National Conference, I would say half the presentations were about play, P-L-A-Y, and joy, J-O-Y. And that is like a first in many years that has taken like 50% of the presentations to say, hey, let's go back to what we know when we remember. And Anne's point about how do you find a common ground, how do you meet the challenges of curriculum and guidelines and still keep the creativity. And that goes back to what we said. We have to learn to see connections. And you know that more than anyone teaching science all the years.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, as always, I always strove in my career to try to put together history and or social studies and science together. Obviously, math and science is, you know, everyone wants to do that one. But to take a look at the other subjects and kind of integrate them into what you're doing so the kids see the application and how. So, for example, you could do an atomic bomb project. And obviously, we've got the physics and we've got the politics and we've got the world situation, and we've got World War II. I mean, we can take all these things and put them together so the kid gets a richer, deeper understanding of not just the physics, but what part science plays in shaping history. Mm. That's a pretty
interesting.
I'll admit that, you know, that science shapes history. But how they're all integrated.
You know, when I was in college, I was not good in science at all. I had to take it. But I remember very, very much, very viscerally, when the day that the science professor brought in a guy to talk about creationism as opposed to science. And yeah. I was fascinated by it. It was one of the most interesting classes I ever took. Again, he made it kind of relevant to me. There was this discussion going on, and this was a long time ago that he did that. It was very unusual.
Jeff, I have to ask you something.
Yes.
do you mind if you just go back into teaching? Because I think we need you.
You know, I have my own cabinet making business now that I've always wanted, kind of like models, but there's not a day that goes past that I don't miss each other. I mean, I love the discovery. I love to see the kids learn. I like to see their eyes just light up when they get something and when they create something, when they, like they would design their own experiments to carry out and to measure something and then figure it from beginning to end. And I wasn't giving them the answers. And just coaching, and we play these games. Even in high school, we play this game. It's like yes, no. You know, you can ask me any question you want about your project, but I'm only going to ask it, answer it if it's a yes, no question. I'm not going to explain anything to you. And I've had them like map out their thinking, and they ask this question. What kind of answers do they get? Okay, what next question does my group need to ask in order to get there? Mm-hmm. And things like that, where you know you're just guiding them.
This is such good examples of teaching in the key of life. This is so, because you said that, you know, the best words were the connections and integrating of ideas. Because when we teach things in separate little boxes and the kids never see the relationships and they go, what do the arts have to do with the Renaissance? What do the arts have to do with early American history? What do the arts have to do with the explorers? Or what does music have to do with it? And when they see everything in separate little disconnected ways, that first of all, it's unnatural because people want to bring things together. They want to make meaning. And when we separate everything, it's a disaster.
I want to read an email from Charlotte. She says, does anybody remember the name of the nun consigned to a Spanish or Mexican convent in the 19th century? She was baking bread in the kitchen when it occurred to her to observe the tracks of a spinning top in the flour on the table. She ended up making some contribution to early physics about solid bodies spinning on their axes. Of course, I only heard of her through a program on public television decades ago. Math and science education are often made so rote and so boring that girls lose interest far too young. Yet there is some rote learning and memorization drudgery that we all have to tolerate in life. But what is the point of it if we never learn how to apply it to other questions in life? Isn't that what creativity is for?
Beautiful, absolutely. Charlotte.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, yes, I'm that's a yes, I mean, no answer.
Absolutely. I
mean, well there's, said.
There's no question about it. That I made a very early, before it was fashionable, I'll say, I noticed in my physics classes how I had all these wonderful, bright young men. And I went, something's wrong with this picture, you know. And I had a daughter who I sent to CSG and, you know, finest her the rest of her education. But I really thought it was very important for her to learn as a woman things that guys learn. I mean, why can't she use a screwdriver? Why can't she think about mechanics? Why can't? And I would literally recruit young ladies into my class. And that ratio, when I left, was entirely turned around. Because they have the capacity. It widens their life.
And it widens the variety in the class. I mean, I imagine it makes the class more interesting.
Absolutely.
And prettier.
True, but I can't say that.
I'm kidding.
Oh, Jeff, thank you so much for your call.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Wonderful call.
And thanks for teaching.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guest is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld, the queen of fun. We're talking about creative education. We're looking for that happy medium, that sweet spot between structure and creativity. And whether or not you think you found it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Marjorie in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Marjorie.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Marjorie.
I just want to state that to me, an important part of a child's creative education is also at home, and it's a lot of the parents' responsibility as well. I was a nanny for 9 months in France this past year, and their parents were never home, and the girls were at each other's throats all the time. They were 5 and 6 years old. And part of that was because, one, their parents weren't always home, and they didn't have an outlet. And so for me, I was able, because I've been drawing my whole life, I was able to draw pictures for them, and they would just sit down and color them. And it was just wonderful to be able to use my creativity to help them at home, being able to have an outlet for all of these things they were feeling, but they didn't have an outlet for. Because when you're 5 and 6 years old, you don't really know how to articulate what you're feeling. And they weren't getting a lot of that at school, and they definitely weren't getting it from their parents. And so just being able to have that outlet for them helped them so much. The 6-year-old, her grades started going up by the time I left, and they were less at each other's throats, and it was really nice for them to be able to have something they could do together.
Marjorie, we're getting the best calls today. I mean it. That is a wonderful call, because there's a great quote, and I never found out the author of this quote, but it is so odd. The best way to send an idea is to wrap it up in a person. And you are the person with these kids and the idea was, this is something I love to do and I'm going to share it. It wasn't like you talked about it, like, hey guys, it really would be very good and therapeutic if we started. But it was you loved it and shared it with them, and they caught that. That's contagious. And everything you're saying about the parents and the home, just maybe not parents, whoever's at home caring for children, that is, you know, like 50, 60, 70% of the success of a child is how the parents feel about themselves, the kids, the importance, the values. Because we have families that I say this at conferences. Most folks want nothing but the best for their children. They don't. They're not bad. They're not evil. But many times they advocate for policies that are really not good for the children. And that's the idea of not celebrating ideas for their own sake, not being playful, not giving them time to explore and to love a book as long as they want to love the book, and not giving them a chance to just walk out and celebrate wonder, the wonder of life and the wonder of everyday existence. Not doing that and worrying about, do they know their A's? Do they know their long and short vowel sounds? And this one little kid said, I think I just had a long vowel movement, and then we deserve it. But I mean, the folks who advocate for the formalized, you know, product-centered ways of learning are just really hurtful to the children, but they don't mean to be. So I think we need to educate those folks as well. And what you did in France, I think, was just fabulous.
Thank you. And on another note, I just also wanted to mention that also parents being able to recognize their children's creativity when they see it. Because I went to a Montessori school when I was very young, but 5, 6 years old. And one of the teachers told my mother that a way to encourage my own independence was for her to set out 2 sets of clothing for me, and I got to pick which outfit I wanted to wear. And instead of me picking one outfit, I picked what I wanted from each outfit.
We need to talk to you, Marjorie. Really, you didn't get you didn't get the assignment, dear.
But the thing was, is that my mother, she was a preschool teacher at the time, and she recognized that this was not just me asserting my own independence, but also my own creativity, and this is what I wanted. And the best part of that was when my creativity started catching on with the other kids who had parents who were a bit more stifling than mine. There was one little boy in my class, and his mother separated all of his socks out by color, white socks in one drawer, blue socks in one drawer, black socks in one drawer.
Wow.
And she came into her son's room one day, and he was ripping apart all of his socks. And she started freaking out, wondering what he was doing. And he said that he wanted to be more like Marjorie because I never matched my socks because I just picked what I wanted to wear.
Another incredible highest praise.
Yeah, and so I think it's also just like parents being able to recognize when their children are being creative instead of when they're being bad.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, Marjorie, this is the challenge for folks at home with the children.
Yeah.
And that is, you've got to get it together in your mind, what you care about, what you value, and your own creativity. If you are stifled, if you are putting all the colors together, you know, in separate drawers, then you have to think, you know, gee, what am I teaching my kids? And, you know, it may be that you do it for yourself, you know, put your own colors together. But, you know, for my child, let me at least try to branch out. Let me try to loosen up. And I think that when children see the people in their families or in their homes doing things that they love and enjoy, that's an example for them. They need to see that.
Well, Marjorie, thanks for your call.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Marjorie.
For putting me on the air.
You bet. Take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Karen in Columbus, you're on the air with Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning, ladies. Thank you for having me on the show. I'm hoping to get some sage counsel, actually. I'm a firm and passionate believer in being a creative thinker and integrating most of life's experiences. It's really just a divine opportunity to learn and grow. And I am actually hoping you can provide some advice on deciphering whether or not the institution your children are in is really working. And if you don't think it is, what role homeschooling might have in kind of providing that balance. I've searched high and low, from story to the private to the public, and whilst they all provide their own unique ways of, you know, supporting that creative energy, no one place is perfect. And so I am currently trying to figure out, is it better to try and just do it at home, or is it dangerous to pull them out and do it at home, or should you just try to supplement even more in your own home environment, what you can do? I don't know if that kind of...
How old are the children?
We have two middle schoolers and an elementary school, so 12-year-old, 10-year-old, and an 8-year-old.
Uh-huh. Are there any schools that they're going to right now that you feel, you know, more comfortable with?
Again, I said I think we found places that they all have their strengths in different areas. But, you know, the sheer demand and the constraints of time on the school day and the requirements to do certain things, it's challenging for teachers to really try and fit that all in and allow for, you know, thinking outside the box to really integrate it. There are places and teachers that I know they do it well, and I've been reassured by that, but it's not consistent. And so I don't know if you're familiar with Sir Ken Robinson's work about, you know, finding your passion and really using that. I think you talked about it a little bit earlier, but I'm really trying to nurture that in all children. And if I could do that at the policy level, that would be great. But I definitely want to do it for the children that are in my care. And I just know if you had any suggestions on how to do that.
Do you want to say something else?
Sure, go ahead, baby.
Oh, okay. My reaction, you know, as I was listening to you, Karen, even within an institution, any school, it goes really down to the teacher. So, you know, you really need to think about how the teachers are impacting your children. And some of the teachers will be very open to your coming in and talking to them about, you know, they need to, you know, I've said this for so many years, teachers need to hear from parents about what they care about, because they hear when they don't approve. And sometimes what they don't approve of is the very thing we want them to be doing. You know, and they're saying, why are you wasting your time with this frivolous thing when my child could be, you know, learning, you know, facts that will help him in his SAT test? And so the few minutes that they have something joyful or fun or playful or enriching in another way, that some folks will be in, you know, advocating against it. So I think number one, whatever school you're going to decide on for the kids, you should be very actively involved in letting teachers know that you value that time. And that's, to me, that's important. I'm familiar with schools like Indianola in Columbus and Kaz. You know, I don't know if you live in Columbus, but Fort Hays and Kaz and Indianola are all schools that are very known for having a much more enriched, you know, open, you know, creative way of teaching and offering to the children. I'm not sure the middle schools. I know there's an Arts Impact middle school, but I haven't been there for a couple of years. So it's something worth exploring. the magnet schools in Columbus that have drawn kids to them, the elementaries. You know, I know I'm in the Berwick area, and I know the Berwick School has been very, you know, highly thought of, and kids are very excited to go there. So, you know, it's school by school. How do I feel about home? I have a lot of problems. I mean, there I know I've some phenomenal experiences families have had with home schooling, but I think kids need to be social. I think they need to be with other kids. I think they need to have the other activities that are involved with education besides a formal classroom. So I would go for the school that you feel most comfortable with that isn't perfect, but also supplementing with exciting and playful and joyful experiences outside of school.
We have to take a quick break here, and if you want to hang on, you're welcome to.
Thank you. I appreciate your thoughts. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Karen.
Good luck, dear.
Thank you. And by the way, I did want to say perhaps our congressional leaders would listen to your thoughts and think outside the box. A lot of our problems would be addressed in a more creative way.
Oh,
we're going to be talking about that in the next hour. My guest is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld, and we're talking about creative learning, creative teaching. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Joel Ario helped design the exchanges for the Obama administration. He says having the Fed run Ohio's exchange will save some headaches, but he says the state will also lose some regulatory power.
Setting the standards for how insurers get into the exchange, picking the insurers to get into the exchange, deciding how products will be approved for the exchange.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes. Hour 2 of All Sides begins. And compromise in the American political system. Do our lawmakers even remember what that looks like? That discussion from 11 till noon. 32 degrees with some sunshine, warming up to 42 today. Support for 89.7 comes from the Cincinnati Museum Center. The Dead Sea Scrolls exhibition is now open, displaying more than 600 objects from the biblical to Byzantine period, including the oldest known copies of the Hebrew Bible. Tickets available at cincymuseum.org or by calling 513-287-7001. And support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's College of Arts and Sciences. The 20th Annual Music Celebration Concert is November 30th in Mershon Auditorium. The seasonal extravaganza spotlights School of Music ensembles, including glee clubs, jazz ensemble, symphony orchestra, and much more. Music.osu.edu. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Mimi Brodsky-Chenfeld. We're talking about finding that sweet spot, whether it's in the classroom or not, between, you know, the structure of education and the idea of creativity in education. Maybe it doesn't start in the classroom, or maybe it doesn't end in the classroom. Give us a call and tell us what you think. 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Allison in Columbus. She says, when I was in fifth grade, our elective teachers would work together with our regular teacher. For example, we were assigned a research project on an animal, and then in our art class, we created an animal with clay. We would also create artwork inspired by history as we learned about that era. Mimi, you're
Allison,
nodding.
I love it. Mm-hmm. It's what it should be. You know, you come back to a place just right. You know, 'tis a gift to be simple. And also, I love this Buddhist saying, you have come here to find what you already know. And we know this is the best way people learn, when they connect ideas, they integrate, they see how things relate to each other. I mean, it's the most simple, obvious, and we are so... Don't even ask me. We're demental. You know, it's, you know fundamentals. We're back to the fundamentals, but take the first syllable off so you get demental. So, you know, instead of teaching people the, you know, the joy of putting ideas together and seeing how they relate, see how they connect, we separate them and we wonder why kids are turned off and not learning the way they could be learning.
Marcia in Granville. Welcome to the show, Marcia.
Hi there.
Hi, Marcia.
I'm a retired teacher like Jim, and I just happened to turn on the radio and listen to him talk. And I taught for almost 30 years in a gifted and talented environment for middle school students who were identified as gifted in reading and composition. And I looped those kids, you know, I had them 2 periods a day, and I looped them for 3 years. So they were almost part mine by the time they left and went to high school. And I guess in the last 5 years or so of teaching for me, the thing that I think concerned me more than anything was the constant drill down of academics till it, you know, became pervasive even in preschool and early childhood education. And I have 3 grandkids, 5, 8, and 10, and I know, you know, from being around them and watching them, that children truly come to the doors of our schools eager to be engaged, active learners. You know, they want to connect with their teachers. They want to connect with their classmates. They want to socialize it. You know, and learn all they can learn by discovery, by making mistakes, by taking risks. And, you know, and the process to them is what's important. Not the product they produce, but what they, the road they take. And we're trying to even take that, I think, you know, away from young children. You know, where teachers are so concerned about their evaluations being tied into performance of their students that they wouldn't think, you know, most of them, to try anything that would be creative and open and give choices to their kids. You know, because it's like, you know, how the kids score on the test, even if we go to value added, they're worried about their evaluations being tied in. And so, I mean, school is not the joyful place that I remember, you know, or that I tried to create in my classroom. And, you know, I used to listen to Sir Ken Robinson's TED Talk on do school kill creativity probably once a week, and I always said yes. And I hated that I did, you know, and I just, it scares me about public schools. It really does scare me, you know, and the first things that go are always the art and the music and creative experiences for children. So it's, you know, it's not, it should be a joyful learning place.
Well, there's pretty hardcore evidence now that the arts, music, you know, performing arts, all of the arts have an effect on the brain.
Yeah, great connection.
But we know this, and yet, you know, many, what? They keep cutting it.
Listen, all the research shows that just as Marcia is describing her years of teaching and how the kids were learning, and that was the best way to learn. We're connecting and involvement and engagement and exploring and learning everything from that pull of the magic. I call it the magic vocabulary. And we, with all the research, with the arts as important as part of every way we learn, we do the opposite. Don't get me. We will get the program censored because we do the opposite. Why do we have studies on developmentally appropriate ways of teaching and do inappropriate ways? I don't get it. Because, you know, people who don't know children make rules, and society is nudging them to, you know, we got to measure. Children are not factories, you know, that we're not talking in business words, but we use business words for our children, you know, and this whole thing. And I won't, you know, probably I shouldn't get started, but this whole legislation that's going to send all the third graders back 1 year if they're not reading at a certain level at a certain time.
The third grade reading guarantee, right?
You know, I mean, it's so preposterous. It is so ridiculous.
But, you know, the way our schools are structured on the factory system. That's where the school bell came from. That's why school classes are a certain time. It's like where fundamentally,
you know,
see them as widgets.
But you know what, Anne? We have to have a structure. You know, people say to me, oh, you're against blah, 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 blah. I'm not.
Otherwise, chaos.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Testing is very important, but it is not the only way we know how children learn. And it's not the only way we evaluate a teacher, because she may have a class of children who don't test well. She may have a class of kids who start at second grade level, even though they're in fourth grade, and by the time they finish, they're at their third grade level, but she's a stinky teacher because they're not at a fourth grade level.
Marcia, did you ever have kids in your class that weren't great test takers but were still considered gifted? Because sometimes it seems like it's all about who gets the highest score and the other kinds of elements of creativity.
Gifted children don't always have high academic records, you know, because they're in classes, and it sounds trite, people say this a lot, but, you know, they're bored with what they're doing, they already know it, they don't have any chance to make any kind of choices about what they're going to learn or how they're going to learn it, so they're just kind of stuck. And the other thing is, as far as evaluating teachers, you know, if the states would use, which this concept has been around for a long time, value-added as a way to evaluate teachers, value-added says that each teacher has to move the child, each child in her, his or her class, 1 year academically for the year that that teacher has that child. And it depends on where they get the child, mm-hmm. you know. So it's just, if you get them, you know, at the 45th percentile, then your job is to move them up from there. Sometimes for me, you know, having kids that came in at the 95th percentile was hard. It was hard to move them, advance them. Because they were already so bright.
You are really ruining these gifted children, Marcia, by not moving them up more.
You know, but it's like, you know, I mean, you know, I had kids who truly had a love for reading and had a lot of choices in what they did in the classroom. And I didn't worry how they would do on tests because I knew they were going to do wonderful. And I knew that if I taught them and you follow the state guidelines, they would be okay. But, you know, now, I mean, truly, teachers start prepping for the Ohio test in January. You know, kids are scared to death and they're stressed out. And truly, we have taken such joy from the classroom because, you know, creativity and learning on your, if we want lifelong learners, then we have to allow children those choices, to make mistakes. We don't want cookie cutter projects on a preschool wall. I hate it when I go into a preschool and see 25 snowmen that all look alike. And I know the kids have had absolutely no choice in how to create their own snowman. Makes me sad, you know, and I hope things change. I hope we get back to, you know, some kind of at least balance in the classroom where it's just not this drill down academics and that children do have the chance to make choices and make discoveries with guidance from their teacher.
Marcia, we want you back in the classroom with Jeff.
You all these retired teachers, what's wrong with you? Marcia, yeah. Thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Thank
too.
You.
Thank you, dear.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We still have a few more minutes if you want to give us a quick call, 614-292-8513. And we might have time for an email at allsides@wosu.org, but maybe it's quicker just to post on Facebook, too. You can go to our Facebook page and post there if you want. Mimi, you're never going to retire, right?
No. Okay. People say, are you retired? I say, no, I'm just tired. No, I can't. You know, I say, when you tell me not to come in, I just won't come in. Except maybe I don't hear you, so I come in anyway. Like George on Seinfeld, who was fired, but he kept coming into work pretending he wasn't fired.
George, there was a creative thinker. Someone was talking about his export-import business, Vandalay.
Who
even thinks of that stuff? So we have a time for maybe one more call with Max in Columbus. Hi, Max. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Max.
Hi. I'm a college student down in Columbus, and I wanted to kind of talk about how I think everyone kind of talks about creativity and thinks it's only this artistic thing. It's only this thing that could have been the music and stuff and music, but I'm in a technical field and I'm in computer software development, and that's a really creative task because the way I attack a problem needs to sometimes be different each time. And the fact that a lot of kids don't have that creativity causes them to not get job offers because they're asked to do problems that are kind of outside the box and they don't know how to solve that. So they kind of fall on their face. And that's why we're seeing a lot of companies now like bring kids from overseas, because their schools are more about creativity and solving problems. And that's pretty much all I had to say.
Interesting. So we're not talking about artists
here.
We're talking about the idea of creativity and how it should be applied to even the most technical or seemingly technical of fields.
Because we're talking about creativity as a way of thinking and a way of being, not as a necessarily a product. You could be a very creative person no matter in everyday, you know, ordinary, undescribed life. You could be very creative. I'm going to go to a salad bar and make your choices. And that's a creative act, just to or go to a gardening shop and pick the flowers, that mm-hmm. the colors that you choose. Every time we choose and select and arrange and rearrange, we are being creative people. And I think people are scared of the word creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not creative.
It sounds elitist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Hey, Max, good point. Thank you for calling and good luck with school.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye. Bye-bye. We just have time for one more call. George in Columbus. Hi, George. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. My wife's an ex-teacher, but now she's back in classroom volunteering with kindergartners. Mm-hmm. And she's just amazed at just how they have taken the creativity out of the classroom. And even kindergartners, they're teaching to a test instead of teaching socialization skills. They're teaching... just how to get along with people.
They're getting ready for that third grade reading guarantee.
Exactly. And these kids are not ready. And you got a kindergarten classroom with 27 kids and one teacher and an aide. And that's why my wife is volunteering.
Well, that's
George,
really great.
I could not tell you more how upset I am about what we're doing with the young kids with the kindergarten. Once you turn them off, you know, that's it. They're not going to want to come back. They're crying. They don't want to go to school. And as Marcia said, they start so eagerly and wait to begin the excitement. And they used to call kindergarten, I have some articles called, two of my articles called about the thorns in the garden of children. Hmm. You know, kindergarten is garden of children. That's the translation of kindergarten.
Oh.
Garden of Children.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I have articles called Thorns in the Garden of Children.
George, we're out of time now, but I'm so glad you gave us a call. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Take care. There's that music.
Well, thank you, Ann. Wonderful calls today.
Thanks
really.
For joining us. That was a lot of great calls. Thanks to everybody for giving us a call, for your emails, for listening. We'll have Mimi back as soon as possible.
I'll be here tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.